This is Ron's Guys Talk for Wednesday, 3rd of August, 2022. It's our first August episode, which is interesting in a way. Not that we never released an episode in August, but man, we're already more than halfway past this year. Oh well. Today's episode, we got plenty of things to talk about, as always. We got new phones to talk about, the OnePlus 10T, the Zenfone 9. I said the Zenfone 8, but again, that was probably my mistake. Kind of erroneous, I'd accept that. So the Zenfone 9, basically. And on so we have those phones to talk about. On top of it, we have the Insta360 Link, which is a pretty cool gadget we're going to talk about. Hence, because this is gadget talk, we're going to touch upon new and cool gadgets that probably come out once in a while. And yeah, again, we got plenty of things to talk about in today's episode. So without further ado, let's just get rolling into it, shall we? Alright, so today OnePlus did an event in New York, and they showed off the OnePlus 10T along with the latest version of Oxygen OS. Oxygen OS 13, it kind of now looks a bit like ColorOS, except you add some bits and bobs about OnePlus that make it a OnePlus phone, or again a skin of Android that OnePlus would make. But aside from that, we have the OnePlus 10T, which is a pretty cool phone in a way. It's now, most of you will notice, last year OnePlus didn't really release a T variant OnePlus. They usually have a mid-year upgrade, and then they have the main series of phones. Obviously, there was the Note series of phones. Obviously, there was that coronavirus, you could say, that's been around. But this year, we got to see a regular 10T. Now, a regular OnePlus 10 didn't really exist. But there was also a 10R, but it's not available in the US or in Europe in a way. But we have the OnePlus 10T over here. It's pretty, pretty cool in a way. There are a couple of cool things that you could expect to see in the OnePlus 10T, and it's pretty cool. First of all, it's got the Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1, the latest Android chip that is the fastest, on par with anything out there at the moment. On top of that, you have 150 watt fast charging. It's only 125 watts if you live in North America, so that kind of sucks in a way. If you live in the US or in Canada, you will only be able to get this phone with only maximum 125 watt fast charging because of the 120 volt standard, which is strange. The rest of the world works on 240, so they get the full fast charging capability, but if you live in the US, you only get max 125 because of the voltages. Again, still don't understand why they have capped it, but that's a cap in a way, as the cool kids would say it these days. On top of that, max, you have 16 gigabytes of RAM in a way, 6.7 inch 1080p OLED display up to 120 hertz, and adjust between 6090 and 120 hertz. So that's cool. Interesting bit to talk about is the display on the 10T is flat, not curved. So it's full HD, it's flat, it's OLED, up to 120 hertz. There's no LTPO, so that's something. And it's a regular OLED display, so that's something to take into consideration. On top of that, this thing about OnePlus phones, they always have an alert slider. But this phone, weirdly enough, does not have a light slider. The reason I explained in a previous episode, because they obviously announced it early on, the reason was they wanted to save space and, again, have room for the antennas and for the processor, or the SoC in question, which is a bit strange, frankly. I mean, it's a weird comp. It's disappointing, and it's a strange compromise for OnePlus, because this is what OnePlus is known about, that alert slider. A lot of Android phones, they have software controls, and if you use Android, you're going to get familiar with it fairly quickly. You used to just hit the volume slider, you press the volume key, you get if it's a Google Pixel or a Samsung or any major Android phone these days with nearly stock Android, you just use the volume keys, you get a little indicator above, and you can just change the setting. You could get used to it, but if you have a OnePlus, it's very easy to have. Oh boy, and Siri got activated. That's strange. Let me solve that. No, I don't want you. Okay, I have to do that. This is all live. I'm not gonna edit this out. Anyways, so the thing about OnePlus is that they're known for having. They're kind of known for the alert slider. as I mentioned earlier. And so it's so weird that they've ditched that because, I mean, given that's a OnePlus phone, on the Nords it makes sense because they're trying to sort of cater to a lower price segments. But here, they're sort of they've cut in this kind of corner, which is again strange, in a way. But the best bit is you get the fast charging capability, you get the 15 antennas built right in, which is pretty interesting in a way. So that's something to take a note of. What else do we have here? The cameras. So in terms of the cameras, hopefully doesn't keep getting cut out. You have 50 megapixel main sensor, which is one apparently being used in the Zenfone 9 and the ROG Phone 6 comparatively. So same Sony sensor on that. 8 megapixel ultra wide sensor, 2 megapixel macro, and a 16 megapixel front facing camera, which is in the punch hole configuration on the front. Boy, we don't really talk about I just realized it. We don't talk about hinges and we don't talk about bezels anymore. So that's trippy in a way. But yeah, so basically, and on top of all of that, on top of the interesting camera, which apparently is not really the best class camera. Oh, these three sensors don't come with any of the Hasselblad branding or processing, so that's a bit of a downside in a way. But yeah, more than everything, you're gonna get 3 years of major Android updates, 4 years of security updates. On top of that, when you get the phone, it'll have Oxygen OS 12.1, but you'll get Oxygen OS 13. That'll come with a whole bunch of OnePlus devices, including hopefully the 10 Pro. So that's pretty interesting in a way. But yeah, in a nutshell, well, in a nutshell, the 10T basically have a Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1. You got up to 16 gigs of RAM. You got 150 watt fast charging, only 125 if you live in the US or Canada. You have the 50 megapixel back camera. It's not the best camera in the world, of course, but it will do wonders. 6.7 inch flat OLED display, Full HD, 120 hertz refresh rate. You don't get the Hasselblad branding. You don't get the alert slider, which is kind of a bummer. You don't get the sandstone back. You only get a matte. It looks like sandpaper. To me, like straight line sandpaper. It's a unique, it's called Moonshine, Moon Black. It's a unique back, in a way. Basically, it's matte black in a way. So it's pretty interesting in a sense. Now, you're wondering about the price of the phone, and this is probably the best part about the OnePlus 10T, and I think this is why people will buy it no matter what, really. And that is that starting out, it'll start out at $650, $649 in the US for the base spec 8 gigabytes of RAM, 120 gigabytes of storage, and then 750 or 4, 740, $749 for double the memory. That's pretty good. It's a pretty good deal. Again, when you compare it to the OnePlus 10 Pro, you do lose out on the cameras, you do lose out on the curved display, wireless charging, but it's a good deal. Again, you compare the competition out there, it's on the higher end of the mid-range price bracket in a way, but it's pretty competitive. If you live in Europe, it'll cost about 699 euros, and then obviously for double the memory, that's 799 euros. And if you live in the UK, it starts from 629 and goes up to 729 again for the maxed out specs. So there are two specs in general, but yeah. It's a pretty good phone, but again, if you live in the US or in Canada, you do lose out on the full 150 watt fast charging, so do keep that in mind. But I've seen some of the videos, and they've kind of mentioned that the charging, it's not really that fast. It really depends on certain circumstances, so that's something definitely worth keeping in mind in a way. But yeah, the fact that you're getting, especially if you look at it with the processor, the memory. It's a pretty good deal, and the high refresh rate display. Performance-wise, it's a great deal. Camera-wise, you might want to look at other options in a way. So yeah, it's and you don't get the light slider, so that's something. And if you buy a OnePlus for that, so you know, then you might want to look elsewhere. But it's a pretty interesting phone, in a way. It seems like they've settled for some bits in a way. Alright, so we're gonna move on to another phone that just launched this past week, the Zenfone 9. This got released last Thursday. Obviously, we uploaded an episode on Wednesday, so we kind of missed it out. But oh well, better late than never, right? So, Last Thursday, ASUS dropped the Zenfone 9, pretty much. It's basically, you could say, Android equivalent of the iPhone 13 and the 13 mini, because if you look at it, compact phones are hard to come by in the world of Android, because we're all about big screen phones. Obviously, if you look at it, Android as a platform is all about the most of your phone in a way, whether it's the widgets, whether it's the apps or games or God knows what. But in a way, compact phones are kind of a rarity. They're more rare than tablets in the world of Android. But it's cool to see that ASUS has a compact phone, which is pretty cool in a way. So you have the Zenfone 9. It's got this cool compact design, a kind of matte finish at the back. It's got two big camera cutouts at the back in a way. So to start off, you have in terms of specs, you got 5.9 inch, 120 hertz, 2400 by 1080 AMOLED display, 1100 in max brightness, HDR10 plus certified to that point. So that's pretty cool in a way. Being compact phone again sounds cool. On top of that, you have the Snapdragon 8 plus Gen 1, like most of the phones coming out right now. Weighs 169 grams, has IP65 slash 6 IP68 water and dust resistance, which is different, which has two, again, it shows two different IP certifications. So it's if I don't get if I get this right, it's dust resistant, but it's water resistance, it varies. So according to the full specs here, if you don't put it in seawater, and if you do throw the phone in the pool, or pool water or rainwater just come through, it won't be ruined. But if and don't wet the charging port. If it's wet, then it'll be ruined. So that's something to keep in mind in a way. But yeah, on top of that, you have in terms of memory, you have 8 and 16 gigabytes of RAM, and as always, 128 or 256 gigabytes of storage in a way. On top of that, with the cameras, you have a 50 megapixel Sony IMX766. One can technically say this does compete with the OnePlus 10T, but this is a more compact phone. That's pretty interesting in a way. It has a 6-axis hybrid gimbal stabilizer. This is the big difference from, say, the OnePlus and the other phones coming out, is that this has a gimbal on the main sensor, like the Vivo X series phones, and that gives you rock solid stability. And when you're recording videos or taking photos, it can get an exact shot, and it won't be blurry or won't have issues, and you won't have to plop in OIS. So that's something to keep in mind. And this main sensor has an f1.9 aperture and a 1 by 1.56 inch sensor size, so that's pretty interesting in a way. Along with that, you got 12 megapixel IMX 363 ultrawide sensor, f2.2, 1 by 2.55 inch, and gives you 113 degrees field of view with the ultrawide. And yeah, that's pretty cool. You have main and ultrawide. Already the phone's quite compact, so I think it's good to see that this is again going for the same kind of market, that for probably the same, again, probably competing with the iPhone 13 comfortably, because the iPhone 13, for starters, only has a main and ultrawide. This has all main and ultrawide, and I think that's pretty cool in a way. But yeah, the iPhone doesn't really have Android. Okay, that's pretty dumb of me, but still, this has Android, so it's kind of nice to have. If you're talking about the selfie camera on the front, you have a 12-megapixel IMX663, so with f2.45 aperture, and 1 by 2.93 inch sensor size, so that's pretty interesting in a way. Along with that, you have an actual headphone jack. Thank God for that, a headphone jack, and gives you 120 kilobit, 120, 192 hertz, 24 bit processing, so that's pretty cool. You get dual stereo speakers. And yeah, in terms of cameras, I've talked about early on, you could record up to 8K at 24 frames a second, or again, and below. So that's pretty cool. In terms of bands, Wi-Fi 6E is supported, Bluetooth 5.2, NFC, and much, much more. 5G is compatible because this is a 8 plus Gen 1 chip, so that's expected. And yeah, you also get millimeter wave and sub 6. Don't quote me on that. I can't confirm that, but it's showing the bands here, so I can assume that would be millimeter wave. But yeah, that's it's pretty interesting. In terms of battery, it has a 4300 million power battery, and again, supports 33 watt fast charging. Given the output here, I would assume it's 33 watt fast charging max, but it supports up to 30 watts in general, so it does fluctuate. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And yeah, and at least you get the power adapter and cable in the box. Some phones don't even come with the charging plug in the box, as I would tend to call it, the charging adapter, in a way. But so yeah, it's a pretty good phone, and it's compact. Just for starters, this is, again, you can't say that for most Android phones these days. Some Android phones are bulky and big. I don't know why I have to burp so much. You can't say that for most Android phones these days, that they're compact or they're unique in a way. So that's something to take into consideration, and again, something worth no pointing out in a way. But yeah, it's a pretty good phone. The fact that you're getting an 8 Plus Gen 1, you're getting a main sensor with gimbal stabilization, which is, again, not many phones have gimbal stabilization, so that's pretty interesting in a way. And yeah, you're probably wondering about price now. The Asus Zenfone 9 will start at $700 US or 800 euros if you live in Europe. That's basically for the base spec. The exact pricing, it'll depend on the region, because Asus sells phones all over the world, and you can't really get an exact pricing, and it's not gonna be available all over the world. So you have to definitely keep that in mind. But yeah, I mean, as I was mentioning about how good this phone is, from the looks of the phone, I've haven't seen any videos, so I can't exactly tell you how it is. But the phone's compact already, and it's got a matte finish in a way. Oh yes, and there's a side-mounted fingerprint sensor, so that's good to see, because the more phones have side-mounted fingerprint sensors, the better, in a way. But yeah, oh, and I was already mentioning about the gimbal stabilization. It's six axis, which is pretty nice to have. But yeah, you got a decent battery, you got the A Plus Gen 1, you got the gimbal stabilized main camera, and then you got the ultra wide only, so that's nice. No unnecessary macro sensors. So yeah, I mean, it's compact after all. It fits snug in your hand, and it's not some monstrous phone. And from looks from the product page here, I have it popped opened up. It pretty much has stock Android, so there's no skin of Asus didn't put any skin of their own version of Android. That's pretty nice to have in a way. And also the product page mentions high grip texture, so I can assume it's matte finish, so that's pretty cool in a way. So yeah, it's a pretty good phone for 800 bucks. This probably is the I would say this is the ROG Phone 6 came out a couple of weeks ago, so I'm assuming that Asus releases the Zen phone, then the ROG phone. So I'd say that this is the cooler minimalist brother of the ROG Phone 6. It has the same processors and all that kind of good stuff, but this is a cooler and the hip version of ROG Phone 6. So that's pretty interesting in a way. But yeah, if you really are into Android phones that are fast, that have good cameras, and again fit snug in your hand, you definitely want to consider the Zenfone 6, the Zenfone 9. Cannot I tend to say the Zenfone 6, but is the Zenfone 9. You definitely want to consider this phone if you're in the market for one of these. Good luck finding them if you're outside the US or the UK or outside of Chinese Taipei or Taiwan in a way, so, or Hong Kong. So yeah. You definitely would want to be, you might want to look it up on Amazon that are importing. It's a pretty good phone nonetheless. All right, moving on, we're going to talk about cool gadget, and kind of this week we're going to talk about the Insta360 Link. It's a unique webcam, to say the least. It's different from your built-in webcams on your computers, and obviously the cheap webcam you can get off AliExpress or Amazon. To start with, it's a bit of a beast. So, for starters, for those who are kind of out of the loop, if you don't know about Insta360, they're way well known, world renowned for making 360 degree camera, 360 cameras, and action cameras, and they're well known for their AI backed modes, and obviously features that let you essentially tweak the videos you make and obviously add effects and all. So that's pretty cool. On top of stabilization, which is what they're also known for, but here today they're tackling the webcam. So the Insta360 Link is pretty cool. It's got a half inch sensor with face with PDAF, so that's phase detection, autofocus, and auto exposure is a thing on here. It shoots at 4K resolution, so you can get crispy face shots of yourself, or obviously of again a crispy shot of yourself when taking Zoom calls, or obviously making content in a way. Half inch sensor, it shoots in 4K. It's got a three axis gimbal, so it looks like an action camera, but if it acted like a webcam. So you'd look at a famous action camera, or one of those like stable action cameras that are gimbal stabilized. You chop half of it and make it a webcam, and this is what it is basically. And you got AI algorithms that offer a whole range of features, which and modes, which are pretty cool to say the least. This webcam was kind of made because of the explosion in work from home, and people are making more and more content than ever, and obviously you need a webcam that obviously fits all kinds of use cases, so that's pretty cool in a way. So it basically has an improved sensor, and it's obviously a whole lot better than competing webcams. It's got a 4K, it can shoot at 4K 30 frames a second, so that's pretty cool in a way. It's got a special HDR mode. Along with that, it's got automatic framing and zooming. So with like that's in a whole mode in a way, so you can make it such that it could track you across. That's pretty cool, and that's thanks to the three-axis gimbal lens, so that's pretty cool in a way. It kind of looks like an action camera if it was a webcam, and you can even, I mean, if you have an action camera, if you have one of the Insta360 action cameras, you could use it as a webcam technically, but this is an actual webcam, so and it is what it is. So you have AI tracking, so that's there in the first place. You can zoom in and out and all that. Also, you can have it change modes and toggle functions using gestures. That's pretty cool in a way, and that's thanks to the AI in a way. You have desk view mode, so this is basically based on a mode that what is it called? It's called, I don't know the name of it. It's called Surface View or something like that. And there's a mode that Apple now offers in the upcoming version of macOS, where if you have an iPhone, you can connect it to your Mac, and obviously you can use the ultra wide angle camera to get a desk view. Here you essentially get a built-in desk view mode. There are no drivers needed in a way. It's not like it should work on Mac and Windows in a way, and you obviously switch to it, and it'll essentially pan in the it's showing the GIF. It points obviously it's moved to the desk view mode, and obviously will zoom straight to your desk. So that's pretty cool in a way, and obviously it would work with a gesture, so that's interesting in a way. You have portrait, whiteboard, and overhead modes. And the whiteboard mode is pretty cool. You have four like little QR codes. You put them on the sides, and essentially then you obviously toggle on a whiteboard mode, and obviously it shifts the camera to the whiteboard or wherever it's pointed. And turns out, and I've seen videos online and on TikTok, you can't fake it. So you need to actually have those barcode style stickers to make it work. So that's pretty cool in a way. And again, you can have overhead and portrait modes easily. So that's pretty cool. And there's like a little program you'll get with the camera for Windows and Mac. So you can have those modes automatically, and you can set them up. So that's pretty cool in a way. It supports Zoom, Teams, Skype, and Google Meet comfortably, so that's not really an issue in a way. It's got a built-in screen clip and a 1/4 inch mount to fit onto a tripod, so that's pretty cool in a way. The AI tracking reminds me of Center Stage on Macs and iPads, but the cool part is here you get this for your computer, and it works on both, again, Windows and Mac, so that's pretty cool in a way. But yeah, man, it's a pretty cool device. It'll cost $300 or $299, and it's already available. It's gonna be available. It's already available from their website or from Amazon if you want to buy it. So that's pretty cool, in a way. What do you think about this instant? What do you think about this cool little webcam? I mean, I'd love to know your thoughts about it. It does look like a really cool gadget. I really would want to play with it if I can. I think I'll probably try to contact Insta360 and try to get a sample to play with, and then I'll probably share it my thoughts in a fortnight's time. But let's see. But aside from that, it's a really cool gadget nonetheless. All right, moving on to other news or information about new gadgets or products. Logitech, so they've announced. Logitech's announced. This was yesterday. Logitech announced that they're building a handheld PC in collaboration with Tencent Games. And apparently, this is because there's an explosion in video in game streaming, and again, people obviously setting up homes or setting up their gaming PCs, so you can essentially have remote. You can essentially remote can a remote desktop to your gaming PC and play games from there. Also, Steam has like a mode. I don't remember the name for this. I remember it was a thing a few years ago. So there's a mode in Steam, and you can essentially stream from your gaming PC over your home internet connection or over your home Wi-Fi. So that's pretty cool in a way. And apparently they're working with Tencent Games to create this kind of custom device that will run. And also they're working with Microsoft and Nvidia to support their streaming services, so that's pretty cool in a way. So you'll be able to play hundreds of different PC and console games straight out of the box from day one, and poor Siri had to come in the middle. But yeah, it's pretty cool that Logitech's working with Tencent to create a handheld. Steam Deck was very popular already, and obviously a lot of people like to play PC games. How do I describe it without sounding awkward or cringy? Handhelds are very popular, especially those that can play PC games, you know? They're very, very popular, and nothing beats being able to sort of kick back and play a bit of Fortnite or Forza. So it's pretty interesting, a little device. We don't know when it's going to come out, but they've announced it, so I would expect that it's going to come out next year. That's pretty interesting. And the Nintendo Switch is popular, the Steam Deck is popular, so not surprising to see Logitech get in. More surprising, I'd say, that Logitech's creating a gaming hardware device. They're no more known for making peripherals and accessories, but they're making a full-on computer, full-on device to play games on. So that's the surprising aspect, in a way. So you could say it's interesting, nonetheless. And I've already talking about gadgets, pretty much, or basically other devices. Switching gears, the Samsung. Next week is Unpacked, so next week's episode, half of the episode probably will be about the whatever has been announced at Samsung at Galaxy Unpacked. So that's pretty interesting in a way. But first, and I already mentioned about leaks, but let's talk about one. Snoopy Tech on Twitter. That's the name actually. So you know, you could say what you want, but that's the leaker in question. Snoopy Tech here posted about the Galaxy Watch 5, primarily the fast charger. So it's nothing special or unique. We know that the Galaxy Watch 5 will be like the Galaxy Watch 4. It's going to have Wear OS by Google. It's going to have improved sensor. It's going to have nice sensors. It's going to not cost a lot of money. So that's pretty interesting in a way. Well, we have more information. We got little tidbits about the Galaxy Watch 5. First up, we're going to get a fast charger, a 10 watt charging puck for the Watch 5. It's like a puck like the Apple Watch, and it has a USB-C end. And apparently, according to Snoopy Tech himself, it charges up to 45% in 30 minutes. So the 10 watt charging will make a difference. So you'll get 45% charge in 30 minutes. So you can do the math. You can get a full charge in more than an hour. So that's pretty interesting in a way. More than everything, further on, Snoopy Tech also mentions that the Galaxy Watch 5 and 5 Pro will cost in Canada to start with. It'll cost 349 Canadian dollars, and 389 Canadian dollars for the bigger 44 millimeter variant, and the 40 millimeter is 349. So if you do that in US dollars, hopefully I'm not pressing the wrong buttons here. 349. It's time for my current currency calculation, CAD to Why can't you USD? So hard to use an iPad sometimes when you're recording a podcast, you know, like that USD. Let's see. So for my Americans out there, this is gonna cost around $270 starting. So $299 for the 40 millimeter starting out, and $389. That would be, let me type this in, 389. Doing it all in real time, okay? So it's tough. Roughly $300 US. So about 350 if you add the markup and the difference in currencies. And the Pro will probably start from 559. I'm doing this all in real time, so you know it's tough in a way. $430 US. So 450 US if you're approximating it for all my folks in the US. So it'll be starting 350. It'll probably be 350. The Galaxy Watch 5 pretty much will cost $300, all the way up to 550 for the Pro. I hope there's some cool features on the Galaxy Watch 5 Pro to justify that high price, because I don't think anyone's gonna pay over $400 for such smartwatches in a way. So that's pretty interesting, in a way. So pretty cool little leak about the Galaxy Watch 5. On the flip side, Samsung is teaming up with iFixit to start a program where you can get you can do self repair of your Galaxy devices. Now, already to start with, Galaxy devices are not the hardest devices in the world to repair. They're not the toughest. They're not that complex like a certain fruits' devices. They're easy to repair, surprisingly enough, but it can be tough for those who are not familiar with repairing, and you'd have to take it to a repair person, to a repair shop. Anyways, so yeah, but now they have a repair self-repair program, iFixit, so you can get parts, you can get tools to repair the screen, the back glass, the charging ports, and a whole host of parts that usually get damaged and would need replacing. Good for the geeks like myself, so that you can, you know, fix it yourself, or for those who are technically or experienced enough to go out and sort of fix it. It obviously will be better than whatever is out there. You won't have to rent out a big old tool. It'll probably be little parts, and again, Spudger iFix's iconic spudgers and screws, so you can essentially open up the phone and obviously change out the parts. So that's pretty cool in a way. And as I said, you can get these parts now from iFixit or through Samsung's own repair repair sites. It's a thing basically. So Samsung's own repair websites, they have online stores, so you can get parts from Samsung, spare parts, so you can fix your phones in a way. On top of that, you will get step-by-step instructions. iFixit's iconic they do offer step-by-step tutorials on fixing all sorts of parts. That's pretty nice to see from Samsung. The fact that it's official program, Samsung is teaming up officially. You could say it's condoned and endorsed by Samsung, and they're doing it. iFixit was a reputable company in this space, so that's pretty cool in a way. It's nice to see that Samsung's teaming up with iFixit. I mean, already iFixit has teamed up with Google, with Samsung, of course, already, and other major device makers to offer self-repair programs. So that's pretty cool in a way. So pretty interesting Samsung news, to say the least, if you call it that. Surprisingly, there wasn't much to talk about, but we've kind of gotten we haven't had much to talk about. Oh well. Finally, let's talk about the Google Pixel 7 and 7 Pro. And interestingly enough, we got a leak of these phones. Now, the 7 and 7 Pro have kind of been shown off at Google I/O. We didn't talk about it, of course, because we didn't do a podcast in early in June or in May. Yeah, in May, pretty much. But now we got more information about the Google Pixel 7 and 7 Pro, primarily about pricing. According to John Prosser, quoting his reliable sources, they said Google Pixel 7 and 7 Pro will launch in mid-October, and apparently they'll go on pre-orders on October 6th and will go on sale on October 13th. So if you are looking to get a new Pixel, you definitely want to keep that. You definitely want to block those dates of October. And if you already have a Pixel and you're waiting to trade it in, then get ready to trade the phones, if you know what I'm talking about. So that's pretty interesting in a way. On top of that, the Pixel Watch, also that was shown off at Google I/O, so that's pretty cool in a way. But more than everything, the Pixel Watch will have a circular AMOLED display, a old Samsung chipset, 1.5 gigabytes of RAM, and 32 gigabytes of storage. I think we've kind of known this already in a way, and apparently it will run Wear OS 3. This, again, this is nothing new or groundbreaking in a way. Well, we kind of now get to have gotten to know when this phone, when the Pixel will launch. The 6A is already out. It's a pretty good phone in a way. And the Pixel 7 and 7 Pro will be unique. It'll have an improved processor. It'll have improved cameras and all that good stuff. So definitely a phone to look forward to. We'll basically know a whole lot more basically by end of September to October. And that's probably when the new iPhones will come out. So pretty good timing for Google, but again, pretty solid flagships from the looks of it. Quite promising, to say the least. All right, got one more thing, basically, if you know an Apple reference. Mark Gurman from Bloomberg, he obviously writes up a lot about what's going on in the world of Cupertino, and obviously what the Cupertino giant is up to, what Apple's up to, and what new devices they might be coming out with. And today he posted, today just a few hours ago pretty much, he posted about Apple maybe looking to delay iPadOS 16 by another month. So apparently, according to Mark Gurman, Apple would release iPadOS 16 along with the rest of Apple's OSs in mid-September. That's when they drop a new update. But apparently, there have been issues with Stage Manager, the feature that is on the iPadOS 16, that obviously let you run different apps at the same time, resize windows. Apparently, there's been issues in trying to get, there's been issues with bugs and a confusing interface regarding Stage Manager. So there's basically been some issues, and Apple will probably be releasing iPadOS 16 in October and not in September. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And but delaying it will mean Apple will put more effort into other versions, other operating systems that Apple has in store, macOS Ventura, iOS 16, and basically try to ship out those software updates by mid-September, which is crucial and important, of course. And delaying iPadOS 16 by October, it's not going to make a big difference. But not surprising. Surprising, basically, that in the beta there's been issues with Stage Manager. So not surprising in a way. But I'd say it's a pretty big update, of course, and it's a big new feature. And it completely changes how how iPads are used. And again, changes the game with the iPad. So I'm not surprised, really, that it's taken a while, or it's going to take another month for Apple to figure out this issue and obviously push a full update of iPadOS 16. So that's pretty interesting in a way. In a nutshell, they're going to essentially delay it to the following month in October. So that's pretty interesting nonetheless. And with that, this leads us to the end of today's episode, this week's episode generally. What do you think of everything you've heard today? The new OnePlus phone, the Zenfone 9, iPadOS 16 being delayed to October. What do you think? Let me know. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at @_mount99. Follow me there if you can. It's in the show notes. So I'll leave it there, so you can definitely check it out after you listen to this episode. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss the next episode, next week's episode pretty much, and again, following episodes after that. And yeah, share it to your friends and family as much as possible. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts if you're listening over there. And yeah, till next week, this is your boy Ryan signing out. Wherever you are, whatever you're up to, I hope you have a wonderful day, and I hope you're safe and sound. All right? Thank you for listening, and yeah, have a great day, all right? Ciao.